And I've noticed this too. So when we're in an RV park on city water, we have excellent water pressure, and it's so exciting.
Yeah.
'Cause, you know, your showers are amazing and you're washing dishes like a champ.
Welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast, where we discuss the journey to real liberty through self-sufficiency, counter-economics, non-aggression, and the agora.
The Outpost represents the border between societal norm and the pioneer spirit. Every episode contains practical, philosophical, and technical information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve. Greetings, everyone. This is Regina with the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. I am here with my co-host, Cyrus Mason.
Good morning.
And today we are delving into off-grid pillar number 4, which is water systems.
Yay,
water systems.
Everybody needs water.
This is a very in-depth topic, and we are going to have to break it into two parts because there's so much about off-grid water systems, from resources, pumping systems, pressure to filtration, purification, even a little bit of survival tactics, primitive tactics. So it would be better to break it into two parts. What do you think?
Yeah, just the introduction will be two parts, and then we'll have continued episodes where we go in depth on specific parts. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to water, mainly because it is one of the most critical aspects of going off grid.
And it will also really navigate your decision in what kind of property you buy, pretty much in a huge way. Because if you don't have water, you're going to have to cart it in if you don't have it naturally on your property.
Mm-hmm.
So it affects most, if not all, the other pillars in a sense. So the pillars are not necessarily in order of importance. They're just kind of where we placed them.
Right.
Well, let's dive right in, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
So the first topic within the show is basically the resource. Where is your water going to come from? And there's traditional resources, and then there's more unconventional resources.
Traditional resources, in my opinion, are the best resources because you can do it so cheaply. You know, if you can build a system that is built around rainfall, if you're in an area where you get plenty of rainfall, once you set that system up, there's very little cost. It's just kind of maintenance, as opposed to if you have a well dug, first you have to pay to have the well dug, then you've got pumps and pressure tanks and all these other kinds of things that you have to buy and replace over time. So in my opinion, I like the idea of rivers and streams and creeks and rainfall, but that's really just an opinion.
And lakes and reservoirs.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. If you can harness the natural water around you with minimal digging, minimal pumping, you're definitely better off. And I feel that people tend to immediately go to digging a well as their first water resource. And I don't think well systems are all that cracked up to be what people make them to be, really.
Well, they're probably, aside from just city water, they're probably the most convenient. If you've got the money and you can pay for someone to dig a well, it takes them a day to dig it. You prime the well and sterilize the well, and then if you've already got electricity or if you've already got a solar system set up, then you're pumping water and you're ready to go. So they're the most convenient, but long term, they're also the most expensive, or short term.
Well, you're looking at, I have some stats on costs, and to drill a 150-foot well, and this is just drilling. This is not anything. That's not building your well out. It's $5,500 to drill a 150-foot well, basically to put a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
So then once you put in your casing pipe, your pressure storage tank, your water treatment, your water heat, well, I don't know about a water heater, you're looking at adding an additional $5,000 to $10,000. So you're looking at a $10,000 to $20,000 investment into a well.
Mm-hmm.
And then wells can also have a lot of water quality issues. So just because you have well water doesn't mean you cannot, that you do not purify it. You have to purify your well water, really, depending on where you live. So if you're in a farmland and you've got seepage from a cattle farm, a pig farm, any sort of animal type farm, you could get E. coli in your water.
Yeah, depending on location, you may have to spend more money on the parts of the system that require the filtering and the purification.
You can also have a well that has really heavy dissolved minerals in it, like calcium, magnesium, and sodium. And these minerals cause hard water, and they'll just ruin your pipes, they'll ruin your appliances. And I've been to several locations where well water just sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Around here.
Like, really?
In my immediate area, the people who have wells around here, that's heavy in iron, and the water just stinks.
It stinks.
Yeah, and iron and sulfur.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Most of the people, and when I say my immediate area, I'm talking about the mountain that I live on, they don't even drink their well water. Like, they buy drinking water, and their well water is just for, you know, kind of like gray water purposes.
Yeah, I would recommend, if you're thinking about installing a well and putting that cost in, to talk to your neighbors first and see what their experience is, because you can have a changing water table. Mm-hmm. Your well can fill with sediments. You can be burning out pumps left and right. You could have sour water, foul water, heavy dissolved minerals in your water. There's so many variables to a well.
Yeah.
That you definitely want to look into what other people are experiencing. For one example, we were in South Texas, and the RV park we were staying in was on well water. Well, in South Texas, it's basically a big old swamp right by a bay. And that water came out of the ground like sulfur. I mean, it stank.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. And then we opened up our hose, and there was probably a good eighth to quarter inch of just slime in our hose.
Ugh. Yeah.
And this is off of a 200 foot dug well.
Right.
And then they constantly had issues with like sand and sediments building up just because of the area. But then out here in Arizona, the RV park we're at, they're on a well system and their well water is great.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Like, it is good. You could pretty much drink it right out of the tap. I'm pretty sure that they have a purification system installed. But this water is so good because we're in the mountains of Arizona, and basically the water is coming up through rock. So mm-hmm. we're getting a lot of natural filtration. And their well isn't caving in because it's, you know, drilled into rock.
Right.
So wells are all about your location.
Absolutely. Yeah, where we moved from, we had an 80-foot well, and
that's pretty shallow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was central Oklahoma, and there's just, it's a high water table all over the place, and it's real sandy, and so the sand acts as a really good filtration. So the well would fill up quickly. I mean, you could pump water all day long and never dry out the well. That was a really great location to have a well. You could drink water right out of the tap.
And was the
straight
water
from
sweet?
The well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The water was nice and sweet.
Oh, we did have some sandy sediment problems, but that's an easy fix. So yeah. You're right. The quality of a well has everything to do with the location. So
it really does. So do your due diligence before you spend a bunch of money. I had some friends that went off grid in Montana. They had, their well cost them so much, it ended up being like over 500 feet deep that they were not expecting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's crazy drilling. So you're looking at spending $5,000 per 150 foot. They're looking at triple the cost of what they were expecting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to run into stuff like that with a well. So I really don't strongly recommend a well system, to be honest, even though people tend to go there for convenience.
Right.
Lots of pitfalls. Check your area. The best situation, the absolute 100% best situation for off-grid water system is a beautiful artesian spring.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're lucky enough to find a piece of property with an artesian spring on it, that's awesome. And you're gonna pay nicely for that piece of property because everybody knows what that well is worth.
Oh, yeah. There was a place in Texas that had an artesian spring right on it. And I mean, this thing, you don't have to have a pump system because it bubbles out of the ground.
Right.
They just put like a well shaft, you know, right into the ground, and you just turn the faucet and it was just clear, beautiful, cold water.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. And in Montana, there's so much water that just bubbles up out of the ground. There's so many artesian springs in Montana, but you just don't find them very often. So if you're lucky enough, like you said, you're going to pay the price for it. You're going to pay a premium on that property.
Yeah.
And it may be worth paying it, to be honest.
Yeah. If you've got the ability to pay extra for that property, it's worth it, in my opinion.
I agree.
I also think that people overlook things like water catchment and rivers and creeks because they think it's too risky, like the water, you know, it can be contaminated, which is true, but it's really not a big process to filter and purify rainwater, you know.
Not at all.
It's not a big process.
The only thing that really contaminates rainwater is bird poop.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, the roof, whatever you're catching the water on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's, you know, there's regular maintenance that you want to do. Cleaning.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to clean your water stuff. You got to clean your pumps. You got to clean your tanks and things like that. That's just standard run-of-the-mill stuff that you don't think about so much when you're on a municipal system.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you right now, municipal systems are nasty. Like, if you open up the pipes and the tanks of your municipal water sources, I mean, they pump municipal water full of crap to keep that under control.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you can, when you're on city water, you can smell the chlorine when it's coming out of the tap.
Oh, it's gross.
Yeah, you can smell it. It's,
you know, and they put crap in there like fluoride, and then you get a lot of contaminants that they don't get out, like pesticides and residues, too, that they don't get out. They're just basically making it good enough that there won't be bacteria or viruses in the water, which they kill through chemical means.
Mm-hmm.
And it's effective, but I don't want to drink it personally.
Yeah. The system that that I'm building here is a rain catchment, gravity-fed, bio-sand filter system, which I think is going to work. I don't have it built yet. I've been planning this for quite some time, and so right now we just have a gravity-fed water system that I haul water to, which is really inconvenient and costly in the sense that, it, you know, I'm spending gas money every week to go haul a ton of water at a time. So,
and you just have a trailer with a tank on it that you hook up to your vehicle to go get water. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's how I do it. And, but that's all part of going off grid. I mean, you don't start with all the systems you need right off the bat. You have to build these systems up and over time. And,
well, and the cistern system is a great system for if you are in an area like the desert where you just don't have a bunch of water. It's a great backup system. It's a great temporary system while you're building something in place of it. So a cistern system can work great. The cons are that you are now dependent on probably a municipal source and you're paying for it and you're hauling it, like you said.
Yeah.
So there's pros and cons to every water system.
Right.
But it's a great stopgap.
Mm-hmm.
While you're building and thinking out a proper system, because you don't want to just rush into building a system. You want to put a lot of thought and energy and effort into design and engineering. And so you're using the gravity water system. Now you are built up on a hill, so that must work out really well for you.
Yeah, which was one of the reasons we liked the property. One, because it's so hilly, it's cheaper. And two, I had in my mind from the beginning to build a gravity-fed water system, because once you build that system, there are no... I don't have to replace pumps. I don't have to have solar power for the water. Everything is gravity-fed, so it's all just mechanical. Nothing is electrical.
Exactly. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you want to pull off a gravity water system without using pumps, which is huge, because then you're fully autonomous, you need about 40 to 45 PSI for your average typical pressure.
That's like a really high pressure city system, which you don't have to have. I mean, I've probably got, I don't know, 20 to 25 PSI. Now, I can't.
So
there are limitations to that. For example, if you have a garden and you want to run one of those high-powered sprinkler systems, it's not going to work. There's not enough pressure.
Right.
But all your faucets in the house, the toilets, the shower, all that's going to work and work fine. Mine do. And I've, you know, like I said, I probably got 20 to 25. I've never measured it, so I don't know for sure, but I've worked on a lot of water systems, and so my guess is probably pretty close to accurate.
And I've noticed this too. So when we're in an RV park on city water, we have excellent water pressure, and it's so exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, your showers are amazing, and you're washing dishes like a champ. But when you go onto like even a pump system or a well system with a pump, you're going to lose, you're not going to have that city water pressure typically. So for each foot of elevation change, you get 0.433 PSI of water pressure.
Right.
So then you must be at like, yours must be about 50 feet above you then. 50 feet of head.
Yeah, that's probably about right. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think 20 to 25 PSI is totally livable. It's totally doable. If you want city water pressure, go 100 feet and you'll get that water pressure. 100 feet is a lot, but for some properties, it'll work. Uh-huh. You can plan that into your property buying program, protocol. But that's how the gravity water math is.
Right.
Gravity water pump math, pressure math.
And I have an article on theoffgridmaker.com where I describe how to build a basic gravity-fed water system. And I describe the things like what head is and how to calculate your pressure and how to build the system so that you don't have airlocks and things like that. So if you're interested in gravity-fed systems, you can check that out on offgridmaker.com. It's How to Build a Gravity-Fed Water System is the name of the article.
Hell yeah. So I'd like to touch on water pumps, because there's going to be quite a few people that are going to rely on water pumps. And water pumps are great. Water pumps can make things happen where they wouldn't normally happen.
Mm-hmm.
There is a little bit of trickiness to gauge your pressure versus your, you know, gallon per minute and your head. So you have to do some maths.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you can get water from a downhill source, which is typical with, you know, your streams, your rivers, your lakes. You're typically pumping from a downhill source.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're on a cistern system and you're not using gravity, you're going to have a pump to get the water out of your tank. So,
right.
I would say many people are going to rely on water pumps, but I guess the main differences are whether you're going with a submersible pump or an above ground pump.
Mm-hmm.
And for me personally, for my research, I would recommend going into the submersible pump side of things, because your sub pump is going to be pushing water out of your water resource whereas an above ground pump is going to be pulling water.
Right.
So it's more effective to push water from the bottom than to pump water from the top, from my research. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The pumps that push water don't have to work as hard as the pumps that pull water. There is also a pump, if you're pumping up from a lower source, like any kind of moving water system, a creek, a river, there is what's called a ram pump, which is a non-electric pump. It basically uses gravity to pump water uphill, and it's pretty incredible. There's only two moving parts.
Oh, wow. I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, there's two moving parts.
A ram pump?
It's called a ram pump, and it has two check valves. Basically, it's the only two parts in the pump, and it uses an effect in plumbing called water hammer, which will pump, it will pump water uphill. And so, which is also part of my plan, because I have a creek that runs about 9 months out of the year, and I'm going to use that for gardening, for irrigation. But it basically pumps water 24 hours a day, and it pumps it in small amounts.
Yeah.
So you pump it uphill to a cistern to catch it, and it will pump 30, I guess I don't have to go into all the mechanics of it, but it will pump 30% higher than the source. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty neat.
That's freaking awesome. I've never even heard of one of these. So I'm imagining it works off of like a suction type system, where once you do the first suction, it has this relay effect of pressure and suction that keeps going to get the water, that keeps the water moving autonomously.
So it's kind of what it is water hammer. So you have a check valve that is allowing water to flow through the pump, and the water itself pushes that check valve closed. And when it pushes it closed, there's a hammer effect where the pressure of the water backs up. And then there's there's another part of the pump where that point in which the water hammers and backs up, there's another check valve that holds the water that backed up for just a second. And then that first check valve opens back up, the water starts flowing, it closes it, there's another hammer effect. And so it's kind of, it makes this sound because the valves are always opening and closing. So it's going, it's kind of like, it sounds like a sprinkler head.
Yeah.
And so it pumps just little bits of water.
I can envision the whole process. I can see it happening. It's so cool.
Right. Yeah, they're really neat. And super simple and cheap to build. I mean, just, I've built two of them, and gosh, I don't think I spent $50 on either one of them. So it is if you have a moving water source that is downhill from where you need the water, it is a really excellent solution.
Yeah, I'm going to have to add that into my off-grid water pump article, because I've never heard of it, and I've done pretty extensive research on water pumps, but have never come across that, and I don't know why. So that'd be a great resource to have. That'd be a great thing to do a how-to video/article on from your end as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a good
interesting
one.
So I think the best method, if you are using this natural moving water source and you have a pump situation, whether you're making it a ram pump or an electric pump, is to dig like a sump hole beside that water flow. So you're going to dig out almost like a trench, and you're almost going to make like basically a above ground well. Well, maybe not above ground, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I have a diagram I drew on my off-grid water system guide, which is on MaximumOffGrid.com. And you basically dig a sump out and you line your sump pit with rock and sand. So you're already getting some filtration. And then you put your pump in the middle of that sump hole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you want to collect your water. You don't just want to chuck your freaking pump into the stream or the river and hope for the best.
Yeah, you want to build its own little reservoir that's filled with gravel.
Reservoir. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be that big either.
So I'd like to direct you to my article, which is How to Build a Legit Off-Grid Water System. It's probably 4,000 or 5,000 words long. I go into harnessing water from natural water sources, building an off-grid well water system, using a water tank system. I go into pressure water tanks, how to size your pressure tanks. I dabble into water filtration and purification, and then I also link out to all my other water system articles I've written. I've written extensively on filtration and purification. I've written mm-hmm. extensively on different types of pumps. It just kind of goes on and on. It's like one of the biggest sections to my website. So if you're looking for resources, that's like a really good place to start.
Yeah.
Although I need to add the ram pump in there. I feel so uneducated.
Well, you're certainly not uneducated. It's just you left something out. That's all.
Yeah. I just wasn't aware. Lack of awareness is, you know, sometimes that happens. I also go into how to run electrical to your pumps, but then I also have a really great article on my DIY solar drip irrigation article that applies to any pump system, how to run solar to your water pump so you have a fully autonomous system. It's set up with a backup battery. Do not buy a pond pump system. They suck, basically.
Yeah.
Like, you see those autonomous solar power pond pump systems, and people just want to buy the package and have everything taken care of for them. Well, it's just not going to work for you.
Yeah, that's not what those pumps are designed for.
Exactly. So another interesting kind of unconventional way that I don't know if it would necessarily be a good idea for setting up to your household system, but it's a good way to move a crap ton of water. It'd be good for irrigation, is a marine bilge pump.
And you can buy those in 12-volt systems, too, so that easily transfer into a solar situation.
Yeah, and that's where I got the idea from. A guy was going over to Africa, and he was setting up these irrigation systems, and he threw a bilge pump onto, like, kind of like a buoy, so he had a flotation device, and the bilge pump just kind of dangled right underneath it. And this mm-hmm. thing pumps like thousands of gallons an hour. I mean, these are hardcore little right. pumps. So if you need to just move a crap ton of water from point A to point B to fill up a tank or whatever you're doing, like, it's a really great option.
Yeah, for sure.
And we could also talk about your water bladder or your pressure water pump a little bit. You probably know a lot about those.
Actually, I don't.
They're kind of the middleman between your water pump. So you want to pump your water. I mean, this is what I've designed in my head. Now, many designs will vary. But you pump your water into a tank. So you're not just going to, like, pump your water directly into your household. You want to pump your water into a holding tank, then your pressure water pump, which looks like a tank. It's like blue and it looks like a tank. Your pressure water pump is going to equalize between your water tank and your home plumbing. So you can get the proper pressure to all of your fixtures. Yeah. And it's basically your middleman to where you're not overloading or underloading your system.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about now. I didn't realize that was the same thing. I've always known them as just pressure tanks, and so it's a way...
Pressure tank, yeah. Yeah. Water pressure tank, pressure water tank, bladder tank.
Yeah.
I figured you knew.
Yeah, so...
About it.
Basically what that does is it saves your pump from having to work so hard all the time, so it builds up pressure between your water source and your house, and your pump sits between your water source and your pressure tank. And so the pump runs and it pressurizes this pressure tank or bladder, and that way you have better pressure down the line in your house, and the pump doesn't have to kick on as often.
Yeah. And then you don't have to worry so much about matching that pump GPM to your house stuff. I mean, you almost need one, I think.
Yeah.
If I think you'd be taking a great risk if you didn't get the pressure water tank. Pressure tank.
Yeah. Well, you won't have as much pressure, for one. And you'll notice that when you first turn on your, say, kitchen faucet, your water pressure will be pretty good. And then it'll go down. Because as the pump starts working, it kicks on with a lot of pressure right at first, and then it slows down a little bit. It's just how they're designed. Yeah. I don't remember what it's called, but it's something that there's a lot of power to the pump right at first, and then it backs off on the amount of power that it uses.
Yeah, that makes, like, when it's clicking on and off and stuff.
Right, right. And so the pressure tank is, you don't feel that change in pressure from when the pump is kicking on and off.
So, yeah, on my off-grid water system guide, I have at the very bottom a section of how to size your pressure tank. Because you definitely want to size it correctly. So you can head over there. We also, all of the products we're talking about, all of these water system products, we will have links to these products so you don't have to go piecing it together. They're kind of, they're not necessarily difficult to source, but there's certain brands that you'll see fare better than others, or certain things that'll sell out. And we have a really great product recommendation page that can point you to all these different types of pumps and pressure tanks that we're talking about. Right on the website, theoffgridoutpost.com, product recommendations.
Right. Yeah, and you can use that page also just to get an idea of what a system is going to cost. So you can, you know, check those links and start getting prices and get an idea of what something like that is going to cost you.
What kind of piping do you use? What kind of material?
From my tank, my cistern at the top of the hill, I just use farm irrigation pipe, one and a quarter inch farm irrigation pipe. And then when I get down to my house, I switch over to what's called PEX pipe, which is just a plumbing pipe. It's a very common plumbing pipe now. It's easy to work with. Like, you don't have to be skilled at soldering or anything like that. There's no glue. If you're going to do your own plumbing, I highly recommend using PEX for your household plumbing. Tech? It's just so easy to work with.
Tech pipe?
Yeah, P as in Paul, EX.
I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, super simple to use.
So super simple. Yeah, that's good. So you're not dealing with so much in the, like you were saying, welding, soldering department.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're using, say, copper, which first of all is very expensive, but you've got to know how to solder, which can be tricky. And then if you're using PVC, which is easier than copper, but you have a two-part kind of solvent, you have a primer that you got to put on the pipe, and then you have a glue that you got to put on the pipe, and then you got to stick it together. And, you know, if you goof up, well, it's too late. You got to cut that piece and start it over because you can't change it at that point. And then if you're using like galvanized pipe, you've got to thread everything's got to be threaded, and you got to make sure you get it just right tight or you'll have a leak. But with PEX, you cut your pipe to the size you need it, you slide this little ring on, you push in the fitting, and then you clamp the ring, and there's a special tool that clamps it at exactly the right amount of pressure, so you don't have to worry about ever having a leak. It's the best way to go. It's less expensive than copper. It's less expensive than copper. And, well, you know what? It's probably equal in cost to PVC now. When it first came out, it was really expensive. All the fittings were really expensive and everything. So it was more expensive than PVC. But I think the cost has come down to this at this point to be equal to PVC, probably.
Yeah, that sounds like a great product.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Well, we are running out of time. I knew this would be an extensive topic. I mean, we could literally talk about off-grid plumbing for days and days. Like, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
But there's two more things I just want to quickly touch on. And the first thing is, you know, you could try and hand dig a shallow well, which is laborious.
Oh, my God.
But if your water table is short, I think it's, I want to say, what, 25 to 50 feet is about what you can do with a hand dig?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's just 25.
I have a hand dug well that I'm digging. Because it's just going to be kind of like a backup well for us. And I'm down 16 and a half feet now. And it is tremendous amount of work.
Tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous amount of work. Well, and they make these hand digging well drills where you're literally, you know, drilling and it has extensions and it's all man powered.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds great and fine until you hit a rock or a boulder.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be location specific on whether or not that's going to work for you.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have to pretty much have prime ground that you can even get through. But then you can also rent some light equipment, like you can rent a skid steer and you can put bits on that, like the large drill bits, and that would probably be your best solution if you wanted to quote unquote hand dig a well.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like an auger. That's the word I'm looking for. We did it with fence posts.
Yeah,
like you can auger with a, you get a skid steer and there's like an auger extension and then you can have extension, you know, to X amount of depth with the auger.
Okay.
And I mean, that would be probably your easiest way. But you can still only get so far with that.
Right.
And then again, if you're hitting rock and boulder, you know, it may not work out for you. So hand digging a well. And then also you can do like a hand pump, like the old school hand pump you see in farms and stuff.
Yeah.
So you could hand dig a well, then you put your well shaft, well point in there, and then you set up your hand pump. And you can find, you know, vintage hand pumps. There's kind of like a collector. They're kind of a collector's item right now, so you might have to get a replica, but you can find vintage hand pumps on eBay. I know they're hot, so they sell out fast. But, you know, and that would be cool for, like, irrigating your cattle or your animals, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the only downside to a hand pump is the pump has to be at the well. Like, that's the only place you can get the water is at the well. So you're hand pumping water, you're carrying it to wherever you need it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's it. You put your well point in and you put your pump on top and that's it.
Yeah. Right.
So it'd almost be like a nice backup system.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, oh, shoot, you know, we're in a drought or can't get water from the water tank today. At least we can hand pump some water.
Mm-hmm.
Phew. That was like a lot of information.
Yeah, that's almost information overload, isn't it?
Holy moly, yeah. However, we've written pretty much all of this information down on both of our website properties. So theoffgridmaker.com, you have, or no, it's not theoffgridmaker.com, it's www.offgridmaker.com.
Correct.
You have quite a bit of water information on there.
Mm-hmm.
That gravity water system article sounds amazing. And then I have lots of information in articles. I have a whole content silo about water systems. So between our two websites, you can collect this information that we talked over, and we give your mathematics and sizing, all those things. So if you're feeling a little overwhelmed, just visit our websites. There'll be a link in the show notes. You can reread it and start planning. And you can ask us questions too.
Yeah.
Like, I've answered so many freaking water questions, it's insane.
Yeah, I get a lot of comments on that article that I answer too. So a lot of the most common questions that may or may not be in the articles are going to be down in the comments. So don't forget to check those out.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a nice collection of comments and questions. Because every situation is unique. Mm-hmm. So it's not a one-size-fits-all situation.
Right.
But the system you apply, you know, as long as you use a proper system, proper methodology, you can make it work for your unique situation.
Yeah.
So then in next week's Off-Grid Series, Water Systems Part 2 episode, we are going into filtration and purification, which is a super important component of your off-grid water system. And we'll go over some modern filtration and purification methods. Modern equals money. Primitive purification methods, free, but primitive.
Right.
And maybe a little bit into survival water systems.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's fun.
And describing the difference between filtration and purification, because they're not the same thing. And a lot of people get that confused.
There's a lot of bad information out on the internet when I started building and compiling this knowledge base, mm-hmm. that people suggest certain methods that are not sufficient enough,
mm-hmm.
to catch bacteria and viruses. So we're going to make the very clear distinction of this is what filters your water versus this is what purifies your water.
Right.
Very important distinction to be made. So you will definitely want to tune into that episode. If you have enjoyed this episode, please give it a rating on whatever platform you're listening. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at cyrus@theoffgridoutpost.com or regina@theoffgridoutpost.com. You can also leave us a voice message. The link is in the show notes, and that's about it. We have free stuff. We have product recommendations. We have tons of content at theoffgridoutpost.com. Don't miss out. All right, guys. We'll tune in next time and have a wonderful day.
Talk to you later.
See ya.
Here's a little teaser for what's coming next week.
So I think that's where people get tripped up the most is how the heck do I even get started in this space? How do I take my dollar from my bank account and put it into a coin, a digital coin? Where do I store it? How does this work? Like, it's a little overwhelming.
Thanks for listening to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe so you can get all the new episodes.